Welcome to the new Cyber Frontier, bringing you the latest news on the local Colorado economy and initiatives that focus on the development of cybersecurity economics. You don't have to be a computer or cybersecurity expert to get plugged in. Your host, Chris Gorog, brings it straightforward, asks the tough questions, and brings the cyber world to a level of understanding for everyone. Chris is personable and opens up with our guests on issues we all would like to see addressed. You can find us on the web at www.newcyberfrontier.com. Now join our host as he introduces the topic for today's New Cyber Frontier.
Hello, this is Dr. Juan with Cyber Frontier. And we have a special guest today, Mr. Eric Siffert. He is with Armor, which is a cloud security service provider in North Carolina. The company is headquartered in Richardson, Texas, and he has been with the company for 5 months. Welcome. So my first question is, what do you see as an industry problem?
Well, Dr. Wanda, what I've seen, and I've been working in this area for and looking at it from different angles. But I think there's a lot of elements to the problem, but I think one of the key elements that I see is lack of preparation for that thing that's going to happen to you, whether you're an individual, whether you're an organization, a nonprofit, small, medium, or even a large business, is you know it's coming, right? Or is most likely to come. If maybe it's already happened, you don't know it yet, right? But what are you going to do? And then all that has to be planned out, preferably in advance. Otherwise, you're shooting from the hip and you're reacting. And you'd rather be prepared and have a response that's based upon your company or your organization's values, your goals, your objectives, based in that way. And so that your response, it, just like anything else you do, is tied to your values and your objectives.
I like that. My next question is, what are some of the risks that you see in this particular industry, cybersecurity?
I think many risks. Of course, if we define a risk, is based upon the likelihood of a threat agent, taking advantage of or exploiting a vulnerability to affect an asset that you have. Our threats are multiplying. It used to be, I think a lot of people considered it to be sort of the hacker, maybe a hacktivist, maybe a nation state, perhaps some type of a somewhat more organized or robust cyber criminal organization. But the line between all those things are blending. And there's layers of the stuff. And there's some interesting liaisons that are developing between these threat actors that you may not necessarily expect. And so based upon all that, the threat landscape is constantly changing and evolving. And you have to really think that way and be prepared to deal with a multitude of threats and perhaps in a variety that you're not expecting or some type of a hybrid combination of that. When I was in the military, we looked at hybrid threats. We started out thinking very conventionally. And as time went by, we realized, there's nothing really limiting these folks. We may think a certain way. That doesn't mean they're thinking that way. And a lot of times they have less restraints in terms of either their laws, regulations, rules, or even their morals. And so when you take away those restraints and you allow them to think much more perhaps creatively than the defenders do, then you end up with threats that it's just really hard to stay on top of all that. But at the same time, you have to really, really respect the threats, the threat actors, whether they're lone individuals or they're somehow incorporated or even a nation state level. You have to respect them, but you cannot be paralyzed in fear by them. At the end of the day, they're people just like we are. They have the same vulnerabilities of thought, emotion, the same weaknesses, character flaws that we have. It may not be exactly the same, but they have them just like we have them. And so they're not perfect. They're not going to win every time, not at all. And in the defensive operations space, if you if you're thinking that way and you're thinking proactively, again, going back to some of the planning we talked about, you can provide yourself room to maneuver, and you can provide yourself some space that you can do what you need to do, and you can actually be quite, you know, quite effective.
We'll be with the rest of today's show right after these brief messages from our sponsors. Cyber Resilience Institute helps build strong cyber communities designed to prevent members from attack. Like building a neighborhood watch, it takes coordination and a sharing community to protect our identities and valuables in the virtual world. Typically, we hear that organizations know they need to do something to protect their cyber assets, but don't know where to begin. Let Cyber Resilience Institute help your community create an action plan. Cyber Resilience Institute will build your community or business marketplace so that it is designed to support a collective cyber defense. Contact them for more information at cyberresilienceinstitute.org.
Okay, we're back with Mr. Eric Siffert from ARMA, and we were just having a discussion about threats and how we should not feel paralyzed as long as we're proactive. I'd like you to elaborate specifically on some threats that you have encountered in working with clients.
Sure, there's one thing that I do for our, specifically for the clients of my company, is we're constantly monitoring different elements of the dark web, of underground markets, pay spends, things like that. We're looking for evidence of leaked credentials, login credentials, email credentials associated with our corporate email and the corporate domains of our customers. We're looking for website defacements, injections of unwanted pages into our customers' domains. We've seen that type of thing happen. And here lately, I've seen a lot of typo spotting. Domains being registered. Now, some of them are just maybe accidentally look a little bit like those of our customers, but some of them are quite, it's pretty obvious that they're deliberate and just trying to figure out what in the world are these people up to. And so we're digging into that on behalf of our customers, because honestly, it bothers me. It angers me when I see a customer who's just trying to run their business. They're trying to employ and take care of their employees, or trying to provide, you know, valid services for their customers, and then someone's out there attacking them this way, and it's obviously malicious. Just trying to figure out what are they trying to do and who are they trying to do it to, so we can be a step ahead of that. To me, it's I take the protection of our customers very seriously.
Are there any particular threat agents, as you refer to them, that, say, American citizens should be aware of in this day and time as it relates to cybersecurity?
Threat agents that Americans should be concerned about. I mean, of course, I think one of the number one vectors into any endpoint, any computer or network, whether it's personal, home, or a business, a lot of times it tends to be, phishing emails, spear phishing, whaling, different things like that. Because it works. It doesn't work every time, but if you employ that technique on a very large scale, it's going to work enough for them to be able to accomplish their goals. And whatever that goal may be, whether it's just business disruption, whether it's destroying assets, or whether it's holding someone ransom, their files or their vital documents for ransom to sometimes use to achieve money, or whether it's cyber espionage, one thing that I take a look at is based upon my background in military intelligence and counter espionage, that type of thing, as I look at corporate espionage, or like in the States, any business should be very aware of their competition, and they should conduct business intelligence activities or competitive intelligence activities. And that's a legal process, and it's a due diligence any company is expected to participate in, to make sure they understand who their competition is in their industry, so they can remain competitive. It's all legal. That is, now you cross the line into corporate espionage, which is also sometimes called business espionage, economic espionage, and that's where you're using illegal means to obtain intellectual property or to get a competitive edge on someone on your competition, maybe to find out about acquisitions and mergers, whatever it is, mm-hmm. things you're not supposed to legally know, but you use unethical or illegal methods to do that. Well, if you look at some other countries, some of them use their actual intelligence apparatus, their national level intelligence assets to conduct that on behalf of their industries, their companies within their country. And when you're facing that kind of collection, very aggressive collection, I mean, that's very frightening. And you have to think that way. And that goes well beyond cyber espionage. It falls into there's multiple ways that that's conducted. So that's obviously a major threat. The other threat, I think, a major vector that a lot of times people don't think about is insider threats. And it's hard sometimes. I was talking to one company, and they were saying, well, we know we have this issue. We have a vector here. We know we can be perhaps we have a vulnerability here. We have a vulnerability there. And I said, but you also have an insider threat vulnerability. And they're like, it's just so hard for us to think about our own people doing that. Well, it is. I mean, it goes against the grain of who we are. We trust our people, right? But people are people. Everyone's human. People are vulnerable. And someone you can trust today, perhaps you can't trust them in a few weeks from now. So you have to take that threat seriously. Insiders can get to you and they can hurt you in a way that sometimes your outside threat can't, because they already have legitimate access into your networks.
So
anyway, those are a couple of threats that I was thinking of when you mentioned threat agents.
So my thoughts on, based on what you just shared about insider threats, is they cannot be detected when someone's hired. Would that be a responsibility or a training issue with human resources and the background check process?
As far as the hiring process goes, I mean, obviously you do what you can, right? You do your due diligence. You do the background checks. And again, all this goes back to what are your company's goals, your values, and you're hiring people that should be able to fall in line and fit or nest into those values that your company has and the mission that your company has. So you would want to hire according to that. And there's an old adage, I guess, that says hire slowly, take your time. And then if you need to, when you realize maybe a person's not fitting, that you need to fire them quickly, but do it in a way that's incredibly humane and respectful. So, and for one, it's just the right thing to do, treat people right. But the other part of it is you're less likely to create an enemy that way, right? If you really treat them right on the way out, even perhaps help them find another employment. But monitoring of your employees and understanding, again, logging, right? Logging, controlling access, monitoring access, controlling times of access. Just some really basic stuff, but just monitoring that and understanding what does normal look like and what does legitimate look like. And then when you see deviations from that, try to understand maybe what's going on with that. Is it something, is it a concern in terms of, are they an insider threat? But sometimes I think if you have a very robust insider threat monitoring program, not only can you detect potential insider threats who could attack you from as cyber threat actors, you may be able to detect a potential active shooter, right? Because we're seeing more of that. But you may also be able to detect someone who's really in a troubled state, and you're seeing deviations from their baseline, and you may be able to help get them in for some counseling. Maybe they're on the verge of hurting themselves or hurting someone in their family. So if you're really paying attention to what they do, and not just algorithmically, right, but taking time to engage your employees on a personal level and get to know them and they to know you, which can be difficult when you have a really large company, but if you're a small, medium business and maybe you're growing or whatever, but take advantage of that opportunity to get to know your people and for them to get to know you.
So what I'm hearing is it's really important to have an insider threat monitoring program as a preventative measure. And some of the areas that our listening audience should be paying attention to would be phishing emails, whaling, cyber espionage, and basically just being aware. And we're going to take a brief pause for a sponsor break, and we will be right back.
We'll be with the rest of today's show right after these brief messages from our sponsors.
Security Services are your cybersecurity experts with decades of experience providing professional training services for our clients in various industries. We offer professional training and certification in areas of cybersecurity, safety, health, and environmental services at our academy. Our in-person and online training provides a collaborative environment where students can interact directly with instructors through live chats or in private classrooms. Visit MurraySecurityServices.com for more information.
Okay, we're back with Mr. Eric Siffert of Armor. And I would like to ask him right now, what employment experiences have shaped his business core values?
Awesome. Well, Dr. Wanda, as you can see, looking at me, I'm not a young guy. I've been around the block for a little while, but I grew up on a farm. I grew up on a farm in North Carolina, so I learned a lot of hard work and observed that from my father, just that resilience, right? Just mm-hmm. to get up and make it happen no matter what, and to face whatever the day throws at you, whether it's weather, whether it's just unpleasant conditions, you know, just to go ahead and do what you got to do and take care of your family and be treat other people right. So that was incredibly helpful to me. And then later on, I enlisted in the United States Marine Corps. I spent a little over 5 years in the Marines. I worked on Harriers, the jump jet, you know, the one that can hover. Mm-hmm. I was an avionics technician on the Harrier, and I'm deployed to Operations Desert Shield, Desert Storm. And after that, I ended up in the Army Reserve. I was a drill sergeant, an infantry drill sergeant in the Army Reserve for about 3.5 years. And then I wanted to go active Army because I was looking for some more additional training and opportunities. And then while I was in active Army, I had the opportunity to become a signals intelligence collector. So I studied Arabic at the Defense Language Institute for about 60-some weeks. And so then I was a tactical signals intelligence collector or cryptologic linguist. I think they call it different things. I did that for about 7 or 8 years. I was involved in the initial invasion of Iraq. And then I served in Fallujah before the Marines got there. And our operation is over to them before a lot of really bad things happened. Felt bad for those guys, and, you know, men and women there, great people. And then I became a warrant officer, switched over to human intelligence, which is signals intelligence is sort of like the NSA, what the NSA does, but we did it on a tactical level, supporting our local commander's intelligence requirements. And then I went to human intelligence, which is what the CIA does, but again, on a tactical level, supporting my local commander's intelligence requirements, but at all times being prepared to collect for national intelligence requirements if the opportunity presented itself. And then I, my last year or so in the Army, I was in counterintelligence, did some cyber collection. And then after I left, I retired from the military. I worked with a large financial institution for about 3.5 years. And I was a senior cyber threat exercise planner. This was a global financial institution, so they had lines of business all over the world. And so we worked with different lines of business, and we conducted exercises. We try to make very realistic exercises, both discussions-based and operations-based, to help them really either develop their plans if they didn't have them, their response plans, or to really perfect them and assess their ability to to respond adequately to an incident. We look for opportunities of improvement in terms of people, processes, and technology.
Wow. Boy, you have quite a bit of experience over the years.
I'm still trying to figure out what to do when I grow up, right? You know, what I wanted to be when I grew up.
You have a young spirit. So tell me, what qualities should someone in this industry possess?
you know, the, one of the biggest things that sticks out to me, and then I alluded to it earlier, is just a desire to protect. You know, I think about so many times when I was younger, or maybe I was in a position where I needed to be protected, right? Maybe I was disabled or injured. And I remember people who took care of me. And I remember how good it felt to have someone to take care of me when I needed it. And so being in the cyber security field, it's our opportunity to take care of people and to protect them. And some of them really do, they don't necessarily understand the threat, and some of them are overwhelmed by it. And so as we progress in our expertise as cyber security experts and defenders, you know, really it's a deep desire to protect and to defend, you know, to stop evil when we have an opportunity to do so. Not to hate people. I don't hate any threat actors. I don't like what they do, and I'm going to do everything in my power, and I will network with my colleagues wherever they are to stop it. But hatred will blind you and make you weak. Wow. You know, I think love of protecting people, even protecting threat actors from themselves, because if we can stop them from what they're doing, then that may be one of the best things we can do for them. But I think on top of that is a deep, just a desire to be humble and to listen. If you're talking to a customer and you want to understand what they're feeling, what's their worst fears. And I learned a lot of that being in the cyber threat exercise profession. When we talk to our representatives from these different lines of business who were wanting an exercise, we would, you know, just try to find out what's your problem? What really scares you? What keeps you up at night? And how can we make you better prepared to defend yourself against that worst case scenario or something like it, or maybe not necessarily a perfect storm, but sometimes perfect storms happen. But it's just a deep desire to listen, to understand, to be humble, to always be learning, to be in a constant state of learning and professional development, and always listening to others, and certainly seeking out correction, asking someone, tell me how I could have done this better. And have a wide open heart to hear that and to take it to heart and to act on it, right?
Oh, wow.
So get rid of the ego, because it just gets in the way of everything.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Right. So tell me, describe some of the benefits of serving the particular customer that you target.
Oh, like in my current profession?
Yes.
Right. Well, I know that because my company's mission is secure hosting, cloud hosting. Mm-hmm. And our company was founded by someone from the 82nd, and he's very passionate about this. And we have that military type culture. That's one of the reasons that I was drawn to my company, is we have that military sense of mission accomplishment and working together, right? That camaraderie, teamwork. So based upon that, that's our main product, is secure web hosting. So for me, working as a cyber threat intelligence collector / analyst / reporter, I provide that really on top of what the customers are getting from us. Mm. And so some of them really aren't necessarily expecting some of it. Like, for instance, there was one customer who they had an issue in their domain, one of their subdomains that was not hosted by our company, but we saw it. And I'm like, you've got to know about this. This is really ugly what someone has done to this part of your website, and we want you to know about it. And so we reported it to them, and then I made sure that we report to them. We have a technique for doing that, and then I made sure, I just kind of did a double tap to reach out to make sure that they got the message. And I was able to get on a call with this particular cybersecurity representative, and we were talking. He said, so you're telling me that this wasn't on our domain, right? I said, no, it wasn't. I mean, in terms of what we host, right, that primary service we provide. He said, so you're just providing this as proactive cyber threat intelligence. I said, absolutely. He's like, thank you. He's like, yeah, you're our customer. We take protecting you very seriously.
Wow.
Again, like I said, I know I'm going to need protecting this sometime, right? Currently in the future, I want someone to do that for me. So that's what's important to me and to my company.
Okay. You spoke of an industry problem with organizations and their leadership having a mindset of lack of preparation for what is about to come. What are some of the behaviors that are indicators of this? lack of preparation. So one can be cautious if they're seeing those behaviors in their leadership.
I'm not sure about actually inside the company prior to an incident in terms of what those indicators could be, other than maybe an attitude of, well, this isn't going to happen to us. It happens to those other folks. It's not going to happen to us, or it's not going to happen to our industry, or no one knows who we are, or we're not a target, or because we're not well known. That could be the same for an individual as well, right? I'm not an important person, so no one's going to try to attack my home computer, my home network. I think that's certainly could be an indication that there's a problem when someone doesn't take the threat seriously. And that's just not taking time to plan out what are your responses going to be. Having a valid response plan. I know when we were working on some of this, we went to some of the authoritative sources like NIST, the National Institute of Standards and Technology. We went to the Department of Homeland Security and their Homeland Security Exercise and Evaluation Program, also called HSE. We went to those authoritative sources to help us design exercises to really help folks. But you have to have a plan, right? You have to have some type of plan, preferably written down somewhere, preferably available to the people who have roles and responsibilities in it, and they know that they have roles and responsibilities in it. And that you build this plan amongst your experts, amongst the people who would actually be conducting or actually have roles and responsibilities. So they can tell you, yeah, this is what we would do, or no, this doesn't make any sense. And then you exercise that. And again, everything goes back to your objectives, your values, your mission as a company. For instance, we see a lot of ransomware right now in the news, right? Well, do you have a policy? Has your leadership got together and developed a policy? Well, what are we going to do if we have a ransomware attack? What are we going to do if it affects this particular system, right? Do we have backups? Are our backups safe and protected from a ransomware, even a sophisticated ransomware attack? So have those plans, have an initial policy or decision-making framework in place, right? So if you're confronted with a decision to have to potentially pay a ransom, you know, who makes the decision? Obviously, I hope he's more than one person, but who is that person, or who makes the final decision? Who are those people? Who are the backups if those folks aren't available? And what are the decision criteria that they have to make that decision? What information do they need as input into that decision-making process? And ransomware is just one particular event, but it seems to be one that's wreaking a lot of havoc right now. But if you have that plan in place and you've exercised it realistically, then when the real thing happens, you're not taken by surprise. It just becomes almost, if you exercise well, it becomes almost like, okay, well, here we go. We're just going to do what we just did a few weeks ago or a month ago. Excellent. And in the military, we used to train, our goal was to train and exercise so realistically and so tough and so strenuously that when we actually went to combat, the combat was kind of easier compared to our training, our exercising. So if you can get to that point, then, you know, you're such a better place to respond to something like that, to be able to react to it, to be able to mitigate it. You're not shooting from the hip. And of course, the question is, why do I want to spend all that time and that money for something that we think is not going to happen? Well, it's probably going to happen, right?
Okay.
You may or not be in touch with the direct threat, but it's going to happen, and it's worth it.
Okay, so it's worth taking the time to focus on being aware, developing a plan, and also some of the qualities that are valued by someone in this industry, and I would say including leadership, is having a desire to protect.
Right.
Okay.
Absolutely.
And your organization having a military culture really spoke to you in choosing them as an employer. I thought that was very significant. So at this time, I'm going to ask you to tell us more about how our listening audience can contact your company for additional questions or if they're needing your services.
Oh, absolutely. Thank you for that, Dr. Wanda. Our website is armor.com, A-R-M-O-R, you know, the American spelling of that, .com. And definitely, if you visit that site there, you can easily reach out to someone there. They'd be glad to help you. If you want to reach out to me, especially if you're a cybersecurity professional or someone wishing to get into that field, I'm on LinkedIn. There's a few Eric Sifferts on LinkedIn. I'm the one with the gray hair. Okay. So feel free to shoot me a message, just send me a connection request. Be glad to help you. Again, I've had so many people help me along in my life in terms of trying to have a career, and I'd be glad to help you any way.
Eric, we want to thank you for your time and your wonderful interview, and for having
you,
the attitude to give back. Have a wonderful day.
Absolutely. Oh, you too, man. Thank you.
We hope you have enjoyed this episode of New Cyber Frontier. Remember, please follow and participate as New Cyber Frontier is supporting a grassroots community effort to empower the individual in the digital age. Check it out at privacyforthepeople.org. Also, make sure to join our mailing list so we can keep you informed. If you have an idea, if you have a question you would like to hear answered, or if you just want to get involved in what we're doing, reach out to us at newcyberfrontier.com. We also encourage you to visit our sponsors' links because they are the ones that really make this show possible. We look forward to seeing you on the next episode of New Cyber Frontier.